You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com. Latin Waves Media is also now available on Twitter at Twitter/LatinWavesMedia.
Privileged to have world-renowned environmental leader and thinker Vandana Shiva. She is the author and editor of many books, including Earth Democracy, Water Wars, and Manifestos on the Future of Foods and Seed. She is a leader in the International Forum of Globalization and on the Slow Food Movement. Today, we will be discussing her latest book, Soil, Not Oil. Welcome to our show, Dr. Shiva.
Thank you.
Now, the world faces, I guess, a common threat right now. We see a series of crises that are uniting the voices of people worldwide. Food insecurity, peak oil, and climate change seems to be at the top of our list of concerns. But one of the things we often ignore or don't address is the importance of biodiversity. So could we begin by talking a little bit about the significance of maintaining and protecting biodiversity in a society in order to address some of the issues we face today?
Well, I would add to the three crises I had identified when I wrote Soil Not Oil, the huge economic crisis, financial crisis that has just not stopped, and in fact is spreading like a virus to countries which were untouched in the first round in 2008. And even there, biodiversity is a solution. Ecological agriculture is a solution. Why is biodiversity so important? First, because a biodiversity economy is the alternative to an oil economy. Everything we can do with oil while contaminating the atmosphere, destroying our rivers, we can do safely with biodiversity. The second thing, it's only through biodiversity we can actually increase food production. For too long has the industrial agriculture system, which basically means agribusiness and agrochemical industry, lied to the world that industrial farming produces more food. They have promoted monocultures. They have promoted oil-intensive, chemical-intensive, capital-intensive agriculture, which uses 10 times more input than it produces. It's a highly inefficient system for using a very, very fragile planet's resources. Biodiversity is the most effective means for increasing nutrition and food production and farm incomes. We've just produced a report today called Health Per Acre. And Health Per Acre hands down biodiverse agricultural systems win over the industrial monocultures. There's another reason why biodiversity is important. When we have climate change, all we know is the climate will be unpredictable. We're having snows like England has never seen. We've had rains in South Asia like the Indus Valley hasn't seen, and therefore 2,000 people died in Pakistan. 200 people were washed away in the desert region of Ladakh in northern India. All of this adds up to saying we can't predict the weather. When you can't predict the weather, you don't plant one monoculture that works only for one kind of climate. You should produce through diversity so that you build climate resilience. Only diversity gives us climate resilience. And within diversity, contrary to what the genetic engineering industry says, where they keep claiming we will engineer drought resistance, they will engineer flood resistance, they will engineer soil tolerance, all of those seeds are available with farmers. They've been marginalized by industrial agriculture, but they are the seeds that are seeing us through cyclones and hurricanes and tsunamis. And we've saved them in our Navdanya seed banks. Farmers are evolving them for a constantly evolving climate. So for every reason, we need a biodiversity economy. And I would just add, of course, the big industry that has ruined the world with oil is now eyeing the biodiversity of the planet, both to pirate it, patent it, and worse, turn it into oil.
One of the points that you make that really resonates for me, in Latin America, we used to have food sustainability where people were actually considered to be poor because we didn't have the kind of industrialization that the countries of the West had, but people were able to feed themselves. Now, after years of trade agreements with the U.S., we have a complete erosion of the land as monoculture has taken over its, you know, so much of the land, but also invasive industrialization. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the cost to food sustainability when we take this idea of development as industrialization as the only form of development.
Industrialization is based on the assumption of freely available fossil fuels. In fact, development has been nothing more than replacing ecological sustainable systems with non-renewable fossil fuel-based systems. So ecological agriculture that provides food self-sufficiency is treated as backward. Development is bring pesticides, fertilizers, tractors, and monocultures and GMOs. Ecological clothing is defined as backward, and then you get genetically engineered cotton, you get polyester, and you get all of the polluting, energy-intensive systems of production. Industrialization was one culture's unique way to use non-renewable resources. It can't be treated as development for the rest of the world, but most importantly, it would be insane to treat it as development when we are fully aware of peak oil, and they're fully aware of climate change. The Cancun summit has just ended with yet one more subversion, one more failure. We lost time in Copenhagen. We're losing time now. Scientific assessments are a million people are going to be dying. Already hundreds of thousands of people are dying because of climate extremes. To call that development, to call the genocidal process development, is really just a cover-up by those who would destroy the planet and people's lives just for extending their super profits for a short while longer.
In an era where everything is sort of mechanically oriented, where we are taught that everything is this linear cause and effect, and that we can mechanically engineer the planet to respond to the solutions we're proposing, what are the impact this will have in terms of our ability not only to sovereignty, you know, as peoples, to be able to have a culture of our own, a language of our own, but also in terms of the kinds of impact that we're having on the lives of billions of people? You talk about not only economic refugees, but climate refugees. Can you speak about this?
Yes, already seeing climate refugees, most of the most vulnerable people, whether they're in the mountains or the coasts or islands, are communities that actually don't use any fossil fuels. They live in a biodiversity economy, but they are the most vulnerable in the face of consequences of the actions of the rich and the powerful who have gone rich through the use of fossil fuels. Not that fossil fuels create development, but fossil fuels allow a region, a class, to appropriate the resources of others. You're so right. We have an outmoded mindset, a mechanical mindset, that really thinks the world is a machine, that you can engineer everything. And one of the insane solutions being offered, which thank goodness was stopped in Nagoya at the Convention on Biological Diversity, a ban has been put on research on what is called geoengineering, engineering the entire planet. If we take stock of what's gone wrong, why is climate change such disaster? Because no one thought of the externalities of the use of fossil fuels. Now, instead of saying we don't understand externalities, a mechanical model doesn't tell us that, linear systems of thinking don't tell us that, they're applying more mechanical models, more linear assumptions, to say now we'll geoengineer the planet, we'll create artificial volcanoes. Well, you want to know what a volcano does? Just remember last year, or actually earlier this year, it was just April of this year, when the Icelandic volcano totally disrupted world commerce, life in Europe for nearly 2-3 weeks. Another idea they have is put sulfuric acid sprays into the atmosphere so that it will precipitate moisture, and it will create a fog which will prevent the sunlight from coming in. Aerosols in the space treat the sun as the problem, but the sun isn't the problem. It's our blessing. We wouldn't be alive without sun. There would be no photosynthesis without the sun. And mechanical paradigm thinkers don't think of what will happen to food if they block the sunshine. They don't think of what will happen to people if they block the sunshine. They don't think of what will happen to the entire planet's life support with these experiments. Thank goodness they have stopped this irresponsibility. The tragedy really is that ecologically the world is interconnected, and the actions of people in one part of the world affect other people. When these actions are perpetuated in irresponsibility, basically what you're really talking about is something I have called eco-imperialism in my book. That you treat the entire planet as your empire, not new thinking. This is how colonialism started, about the empire of man over the inferior creatures, and the inferior creatures included all of the third world communities as well as all other species. And I am absolutely so proud of Latin America, where whether it's Bolivia with its initiatives on the rights of Mother Earth, or it's Ecuador, which has courageously put the rights of nature into its constitution. You know, it's giving another paradigm. I was in Ecuador a few weeks back. I signed with the movement in Ecuador constitutional challenge on the basis of the rights of nature of British Petroleum's totally devastating the Gulf of Mexico. So some new things are getting born, and they're going to, they look like seeds. They look like nothing today. But, you know, a small acorn grows into an oak tree. And what's happening in Latin America in providing an alternative worldview to industrialism, to capitalism, to globalization, is sowing the seeds for an alternative future.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about this paradigm shift, because I think culturally we have been the result of hegemony, where everywhere in the world this idea of what a high quality of life is equates to consumption, equates to highways, equates to cars. What is that relationship, and how do we draw back? How do we change that?
The idea that more consumption, more wasting of the earth's resources is part of progress, a better quality of life, has been sold by the very people who have turned human beings, as independent thinking human beings, into mere consumers. When each of us should be producing, each of us should be creating, each of us should be using our minds, our hands, our hearts to give something to the world and not just to consume. Consumption was the word used for tuberculosis in the Middle Ages in Europe. And it's interesting that a word that killed has been applied to kind of living that's killing the planet and killing people. It's killing people for the simple reason that we are so dependent on the planet, we can't live in a polluted planet, we can't live in a depleted planet. How do we get out of this mindset of being consumers? First, we have to recognize we're part of nature. The separation that has been created by a worldview that wants to predate on the planet makes us systematically think we are separate from the web of life, but we are not. The second, that just as much as nature is creative, we too are creative. We have to reclaim our creativity. And the third thing is, we have to reclaim our full humanity as spiritual beings, as productive beings, as creative beings, as community beings, as people who are embedded in society, culture, and community. Because the minute you shift to that, then how healthy are you and your community becomes a better way of defining your quality of life and your wellness. How much clean water, how much healthy food are you getting starts to define your well-being rather than how much are you spending on junk food. Interestingly, whether it is in India where we have a concept of living right, or the Buddhist concept of Dharma, again, right livelihood, or the Latin American concept, the Mayan concept of summa causae, or Bhutan, where I will be going in a few days because I'm helping the government turn Bhutan into a 100% organic country, they have given up growth, which leads to more consumption, because growth is only how much commerce is happening. They have said we will measure gross national happiness of our people. And they have 72 indicators through which they serve the people to ensure the happiness and not consumerism. So we have enough alternatives, and we need to start taking confidence in our own cultures, in our own cultures having given us a different worldview from societies that have got addicted to industrial capitalism. And no one's going to give this to us. We have to rebuild it, rejuvenate it for ourselves.
One of the projects that you have engaged over several years now is this regeneration of environments. For many people in North America, it's almost unthinkable that we can go back from a culture of chemical fertilizers and industrialized kind of agriculture. How do we recreate that biodiversity within systems that are so ingrained to the economic levers and power within a country like Canada or the U.S.?
In the third world, we need to protect our biodiverse systems. And in the countries that have destroyed their biodiversity base, they just have to rejuvenate them. And they are. And I know so many young people who are moving to farming, to seed saving, to ensuring that they have a life beyond oil. I met an amazing man who's written a book on the Canadian tar sands. And we were talking at dinner because we were addressing the same conference. And the interesting thing is, he didn't know I'd written soil, not oil. But both of them said, what's your conclusion? I said, gardening. And I said, what's your conclusion? He said, gardening. So people who are aware are starting to shift. And no matter what situation you're in, the challenges will be different, the arrangements will be different, but everywhere we have to start saving seeds, we have to start rejuvenating biodiversity, and most importantly, we have to start doing organic farming, because as I've said in my book, Soil Not Oil, 40% of the climate solution is biodiversity, organic farming, and local food economies. Now, the governments who have been patronizing the polluters from Copenhagen to Cancun are failing us. They are not allowing a legally binding reduction in emissions that are causing disastrous climate change. It has to be people. That 40% reduction is in our hands to make. We don't have to wait over a haggling of 1%, 2%, 5% reduction, and that too voluntary and not legally binding. We need to go for the 40% solution, and that is a people solution.
Before we can move on, I also think we need to address this new idea of carbon trading. Where do you stand on this, and can we really see a change from allowing this trading on carbon and the amount of polluting company can do?
We've seen the results of carbon trading. It was introduced through the Kyoto Protocol. The target was 5% reduction. We've had a 17% increase in emissions. Carbon trading has just made the polluters super rich because they trade in their pollution. They price their pollution at a certain level. And instead of pollution coming down, pollution's going up. The polluters are not having to pay. I am part of the expert group for drafting the 12th plan for our country. And of course, the neoliberal fundamentalists are pushing trade in pollution. And the rest of us who know what it means are trying to stop it. Everywhere the fashion is, let the polluters get rich. Let there be no regulation. And let them trade their way to avoiding any responsibility. Carbon trading has been proven to be a failure. Anyone who promotes it is really working for the polluters.
One last question, and I think that, as you point out, the signs are on the wall. We know that we can't carry on destroying the world and acting as if we live in silos. We are all interconnected. In your book, you call for a return to sound agricultural principles. What do you mean by this?
How does nature work? How does Gaia work? She recycles everything. A natural forest doesn't need fertilizer. There's constant decomposition, uptaking, nutrient cycles are being maintained. And not only does the forest not need irrigation, it provides us with water by managing the hydrological cycle. The nutrient recycling, water recycling are two vital elements of sound ecological principles. Nature does not grow a monoculture. Nature grows diversity. Any agricultural system based on nature's principles must have diversity. And as I mentioned, this does not mean preserving nature while people starve, but it means conserving nature and feeding people much more effectively than the industrial system is able to. It is starving 1 billion people annually, and 2 billion people are cursed with diseases of obesity, diabetes, and everything else that goes with industrial food. So sound principles of agriculture recognize that the soil health is what creates nutritious food, which is what creates human health, and the linkages between the earth and us is a vital element of sound agricultural principles.
In your book, you talk of the sacred cow or sacred car, and I just wonder if you could touch a little bit on our diets and our addiction to meat and the cost that this exerts on the earth and the soil of the earth.
Well, just as much as agribusiness propaganda has converted the world into monocultures of corn and soya and canola and cotton, agribusiness propaganda, the meat industry, has made it look like a heavy meat diet is more nutritious than a vegetarian diet, even though all the research shows that a good vegetarian diet is the most healthy, and more vegetables in your diet is much more healthy than more meat in your diet. But worse, producing meat in a highly intensive way is an inefficient system. You're using 10 times the input as protein to feed cattle who don't want to eat protein. They want to eat grass. They're herbivores. That's what their stomachs were designed to digest. You torture them with grain and intensive feed, use 10 times more protein to feed them than you can produce as meat, and then you torture the people by making this meat appear cheap on the supermarket shelf with all the subsidies that go with the feed industry, that go with the intensive livestock industry, and all the externalities, the throwing away of pollution, the torture to the animals, all those are externalities. And people and the planet are paying the bill.
Thank you so much. Now, talk a little bit about your organization, Navdanya. What is Navdanya and how can people participate?
Well, Navdanya is spelled Navdanya. People can visit the website with that name. It means nine seeds, which stands for diversity, but it also means the new gift, which for me means reclaiming our commons in a period of privatization. When seeds are being patented, to share seeds is reclaiming the commons. When water is being privatized, to keep it in the public domain is protecting the commons. And that's what we do in Navdanya. How can people contribute? Those who'd like to contribute financially, very welcome. Please write to me, write to Navdanya. My email is vandana@vandanashiva.com, and we'll tell you how you can donate. For those who'd like to come and see our work, share the principles of what we do. We offer courses. Go to our website. We have an Earth University on our organic farm. And for those who'd like to come for a longer time, we have volunteership, we have internships, and we welcome exchange, we welcome visitors, because as I have said in Soil Not Oil, we are an Earth community, and that's what we are trying to build. We are not just growing food organically. What we want to grow is communities that have a deep sense of our common humanity.
Thank you so much for being with us. Vandana Shiva's book, Soil Not Oil, is a must read for anyone who is interested in protecting our future. Thank you again for writing this.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.